All right, all right. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. RSG Renegade Radio, and you are now in tune to the Resistance. We are here again, like we always do about this time, Tuesday night, 8:30 to 10:30, holding you down with your latest sports news, some good old-fashioned trash talk. We keep a real barbershop around here. So, you know, we got a real cut-up, loose atmosphere, and I got my team rolling with me. I got my man Phil T, Sports PhD, holding me down on the line.
Hey, what's happening, man? You know, if you in the barbershop, I'm that cat in the corner who is just there. I don't have no appointment. I got my hair cut yesterday. I'm just chilling. I got nowhere else to be, and I don't want to be anywhere else.
What did you say? You that cat, you know, just watching what's on the TV, just hanging out.
Right.
You know, might have some bootleg CDs to sell. You know,
right.
He working some kind of angle, but he ain't there to get a haircut.
Right.
And we got our man D Wills, who will be joining us shortly. He's in transition right now. D Wills, the cat coming in late. You know, his barber sitting in the barber chair waiting. Like, man, I had a 4:30. It's 4:50. Anybody want in? I'm about to get his brother's appointment up. So that's D Wills right now.
That guy always comes in with the best excuses.
Man, I kid you not, man. I'm taking my son. I have a 6-year-old son, so I'm taking my son to the barber shop to get his hair cut. You know, first day of school and whatnot. He's starting first grade, and man, not only was this cat late, but as this cat was getting out of his car in the parking lot, I don't know if he left his car in neutral or what. His parking lot, the parking lot of the barbershop is on a little slope. Man, this brother's car started to roll back down a lot. That is the wrong place to have your car roll by a window. The last place you wanted to roll by is a barbershop window. As soon as you go into the shop,
they're going to let you know.
Oh man, we was in there like, oh, he's gonna lose it. If it goes into the car wash, it's a wrap. Because it was a car wash at the end of the hill, and his ride was headed straight for that car wash. So it was gonna be a catastrophe, and he got his ass clowned when he came to the barber shop. Deservedly so.
He should. That's right.
It was like the scene in Friday where the cow was going to smoke. He's trying to stop it with his chucks on. He got his foot out the car. He's trying to stop it. That's what it was like, man. His brother was doing everything he could to stop this car from rolling down the hill, man, except for putting it in gear. So we got a loaded show for y'all tonight. Lots to get into, as always. If you want to get on with the Real Sports Guys, call in at 1-347-989-0844. We'll get you on. We'll let you jump in. Jump into the huddle, step on into the barbershop, step out on the corner, and you got to prove that you can hang, though, because if you come weak, we may not let you back on. We appreciate you listening. We can't have no weak sauce in the house of the gods, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, we're going to keep it all the way real, and we're going to get it rolling. So, we're going to jump right into the show, and we're going to get this going, all right? We always started off with a little segment we like to call the Funky Editorial. This week's Funky Editorial, we're going to get into quite a few things, but we're going to focus on taking it to that next level. All right? Guys, teams, coaches, college programs that have taken it to that next level over the last year, how they did it, you know, can they maintain it, all of that good stuff we're going to get into. So we're going to go next level with this Funky Editorial.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
right.
Coleman, Ryan, say it.
Yeah.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right. So to kick this off, I already prefaced it. I'm going to go ahead and kick it off. And I'm going to have my man D. Will take the rocket and run with it. My man PhD. Apologies, brother. I'm going to have my man PhD take the rock and run with it for the moment, and he's going to get us going and get us started off with the Funky Editorial for the night. You got that, bro?
I got it.
All right, roll with that.
Now, my guy is a classic underrated guy. And like you said, we're picking guys, programs, what have you, that have all of a sudden just popped up to be elite. Okay? This time last year, we weren't talking about this guy being an elite player. And for me, you know, you asked us to compare who this now elite guy is to one of the greats. Well, I'm sticking to the NFL, and I'm sticking to receivers. And the great that I'm going to compare this guy to is Isaac Bruce. Yes, Isaac Bruce that played with the Rams. And unfortunately, I think Isaac Bruce is one of the most underrated NFL players to ever play. If you look at the record books, this guy is actually third all time in receiving yards. Okay? And we were in the barbershop and asked Cass to have the top five guys who have, you know, receivers. I doubt most people would pick Isaac Bruce to be in that list, but he deserves to be there. And unfortunately, when he was playing, he was kind of underrated as well. So my guy is Greg Jennings for the Green Bay Packers. I think this guy is one of the elite receivers right now, and it kind of happened at a blink of our eye. You know, I'm not just saying it because the Packers are 5-0. I'm not just saying it because he's got off to a great start this season. I'm not just saying it because they won the championship last year. If you look at how defenses are playing the Green Bay Packers, they pay a lot of attention to Jennings. And because of this, this opens up a lot of opportunities for the Jordy Nelsons of the world, the JerMichael Finleys. And again, these guys are tough too, especially Finley in terms of, you know, him being a matchup nightmare. But if you look at Jennings now, I can't think of five other receivers that I'm going to put in front of him outside of Kelvin Johnson, Andre Johnson, you know, perhaps Larry Fitzgerald and Roddy White. You know, I mean, maybe the way Welker's playing this year, but again, you know, if you're looking at just the most dynamic guy, I'm certainly putting Greg Jennings in that discussion. I'm not saying he's the best receiver right now, but he snuck into that top five without a lot of us knowing. And, you know, I mean, his story is really interesting. You know, he's from Kalamazoo. Yes, I'm also from Kalamazoo. I mean, this kid was an all-state hooper, football player, you know, track guy. And he actually got an offer to play at Michigan, but the last, you know, well, not the last minute, but they pulled it back to recruit somebody else. So we ended up at Western Michigan. I mean, this guy still holds a lot of MAC records. He caught 98 balls his senior year, got drafted late in the second round. And I think the situation he got pulled into was really nice with the Packers because, you know, Driver was kind of the guy there. They had some other receivers that were kind of aging. And, of course, Brett Favre was there. I mean, it was an established program, an established offense. He had the opportunity to just kind of sneak in and, you know, and be very, very functional his first year. And by the time it was the second year, he was the guy there, you know. But the thing for me that makes him stand apart is his quickness and his speed. Okay, a lot of receivers are quick, but you don't see that, you know, and then a lot of receivers are speed, but you don't see the combination of the two very often. And with Greg, you see it. I mean, this guy can catch a five-yard out and take it to the house. And we see him make these big plays, but again, the kid's only 5'11", 6 foot, you know, 180, 190 pounds, but his acceleration is just off the map. You know, we were given a video game ranking of his acceleration and his agility. I mean, he'd be like 99, 98 in both of those. So anyway, I mean, that's my guy for those reasons. Yeah, I got an emotional attachment there, but again, I mean, he's just the guy. The thing that's like the last thing I'll say is the play that took me over the edge was watching the Sunday night game against Atlanta this past Sunday. He caught this ball over the middle and stuck it in the end zone right before halftime. And if you see the aggression in which he caught that ball and ran away from corners, okay, he ran away from Grimes and Weems, some of the best corners in the league in terms of speed. He ran away from them, got around the corner, and got in the end zone. I mean, to me, that's why he's a top five guy.
Yeah, that is an excellent choice. And again, on that play, I think that play to me, because I was watching the same play. I saw the same play. I was watching the game. And for me, that play was a tremendous illustration of his athletic ability. Because he might have taken off from, you know, the four-yard line, which is, you know, we're talking yards. That's 12 feet. I mean, that's a good 12 to 15 feet that he took off from.
Yeah.
And this brother dove and was able to keep his body in the air long enough so that his knees didn't touch the ground until he got into that end zone.
Yeah.
It was really an unbelievable play. It was really a very high-level play. But I agree. I think Greg Jennings is in that top 4 to 5 receivers. I think depending upon what you want in a receiver,
yeah,
those guys can be interchangeable. Right now, I think the two guys that are kind of head and shoulders above everybody else is Megatron and Andre Johnson. But
right.
Greg is right there in that next group with Roddy White, you know, possibly Vincent Jackson or Wes Welker. But he's right in that group as far as guys who are extremely explosive. He plays with an amazing quarterback who you could also put in that conversation of a guy who's going from good to elite in a hurry. Aaron Rodgers is playing the quarterback position. Now, he's not the guy I'm picking, but I do want to give him some props.
You know,
that dude is bad.
Yeah, he is.
I mean bad and good, as in good, you know, like the
right.
young people use it.
You know, I mean, getting back to Greg, man, you know, Greg, this kid scored 50 points in a basketball game in high school. And again, I mean, our school has 1,500 students in it. I mean, this is no small school. In fact, the last 2 years, we've actually won the state championship in the biggest class in Michigan, okay? And, I mean, this kid, his senior year, they lost in the championship game in the finals. And in high school, he was even a little bit overshadowed because, you know, he was a top 10 guy in the state. But his teammate, who's also in the NFL, Jerome Harrison, he was one of the top running backs in the country. And, you know, it was almost like Greg was a little bit overshadowed a little bit. I mean, Greg still did his thing in high school. You know, they actually won the state championship in track as well. But, you know, to see what he's doing now, I mean, you know, I was talking to one of my friends, and I was making my case for Greg being a top 5 receiver. And it was like, yeah, you know what, you're right. He just kind of snuck into it because this time last year, I don't know if I would have listed him there. And I think sometimes we get too carried away with fantasy stats, okay? But when you look at how a guy has an effect on the game and alters how the defense plays, to me, that's what makes him a game changer.
And that's the adjective, not the noun, okay? Let's keep that straight.
Right.
There's only one game changer.
Right. Okay. All right. I mean, you're getting all swole up in the chest over there.
I'm just saying. No, but I agree, man. I think Jennings has definitely pushed himself up into that rare air. And I like the Isaac Bruce comparison. I really dig that. I like that comparison. I think that comparison is spot on. Because I think his speed is underrated. I think people think that he's a good route runner, which he is. He's an exceptional route runner. And I don't think people see him as a speed guy. They see him as an explosive guy, but I don't think they really, really appreciate. Like, when you talk about some of the fastest guys in the league, his name is not going to come up. But I think he is one of those guys. Like you said, he runs away from cats on a regular basis. And he's a key cog in that offense. So I'm definitely on board with Jennings as a next level nominee here in the RSG Nation. Definitely, absolutely. Do you have any others, brother Phil?
I'm sorry.
Did you say again? Do you have any other nominees?
No, that's the only one I'm gonna come with. I mean, we
okay.
got another round. I may have one for you, but I'm gonna start
okay.
different.
All right, I got a couple. In particular, two guys who have very different trajectories to get to where they are. Both running backs in the NFL. Both on teams that are somewhat surprising. And both of these players, I think, are the key reasons that their teams are having the success that they're having because of the luxuries they afford their passing offenses. And those two players are the Buffalo Bills running back Fred Jackson, and then the Raiders running back Darren McFadden. I think both of these guys have elevated themselves into the what I would consider an elite running back category with their play this season. First, I'll talk about Jackson. Jackson is, this year, he's a do-it-all kind of guy. You know, he has a real interesting backstory. He's 30 years old, all right? This is his, I think, fifth year in the league. He's out of Coe College, which is a Division III school in Iowa. The only reason he's in the league is because Marv Levy, the Bills GM, is a Coe College alum, and they had a relationship. When Fred Jackson was playing semi-pro ball, he and Marv stayed in contact. And Marv always said that if he ever got in a position to give him an opportunity, he'd give him an opportunity and invite to camp. Talk about a fine. Talk about a little feather in your cap as a GM. For Marv Levy, this is a huge, this is a bedazzled feather in his cap. You know, he's got rhinestones on it and everything, because this guy is really making his team go. He's got 480 rushing yards thus far this season, averaging 5 yards a carry. He's also got 19 receptions at 12 yards a reception. For a running back, that's Marshall Faulk territory as far as yards per touch out of the backfield receiving. And he's got 19 receptions. So this guy is on pace to put up some pretty excellent numbers. And he's a big reason that Baltimore is in the position that they're in. He helps him get those short yardage first downs. He's a threat out of the backfield. He's a release valve for Fitzpatrick. He's really probably their go-to guy on offense. Stevie Johnson is a good receiver, but he's also more of a deep threat. He's not really a possession guy. I think Jackson is playing some of that possession role, which is why you see that his yards per catch are so high. Because 12 yards, that's higher than some receivers. I think that may be higher than some guys like Roddy White, some bigger name receivers out there. So he's putting in a lot of work for his team. He's got 5 touchdowns, and he's taking a lot of pressure off Fitzpatrick. You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a good quarterback. He's looked great. I think he's looked great partly because of Fred Jackson and what he's brought to the table. This is a guy who's an extremely hard worker. He's a lunch pail, hard hat kind of guy. All those cliches you want to throw out about hard work, that's what you have in Fred Taylor. This is a guy who came up through the league kind of, you know, on the strength of a connect. You know, he had a connect, but he had to make good on it. You know, he had to make good on it, and damn, he's made good. And he's making Marv Levy look like a genius right now. Because, you know, they got the Bills at 4-1, and he's a huge part of it. And he's doing it all at 30, which is also nothing to you know, shake a stick at.
Right.
You know, so that's a guy who I think – and I think now you have to look at him. I think he's going to finish up – if he stays healthy, of course. If he stays healthy, he's going to have an elite type of season this year. He's going to have one of those – you know, by the end of the season, we're going to all look at Fred Jackson a little bit differently than we look. Because I was real skeptical of his success. You know, he had some moderate success. He had, in 09, he had a 1,000-yard season. Last year, he was at about 900 yards. So those are good numbers, but those aren't premier back numbers. This year, he's on pace to put up some premier numbers at the running back position. Again, it's kind of a one-season deal. And because of that, if I were going to find a historical comparison, my historical comparison would be a guy like a Terrell Davis or a Ricky Waters, guys who had short-lived success but were excellent runners and also excellent pass catchers out of the backfield, particularly Ricky Waters. Waters was excellent at getting the ball out of the backfield and making something happen in a West Coast system. Now, I'm not well-versed in what the Bills run. I mean, I'm still getting familiar with this team, I think, as everybody is. Still getting familiar with who this team is and what are the things that they do well and what are the things that the systems that they run. But this guy is a key part of it. He's an excellent pass catcher. So when I watch him play, I see a lot of Ricky Waters. I see a lot of Terrell Davis in his running style. But I think the type of impact he has on the game reminds me more of a Ricky Waters kind of a player. The other guy who I had is Darren McFadden. Now, Darren McFadden is a top five draft pick. He's a guy who got off to a slow start, a lot of expectations, didn't necessarily live up to those expectations early on because of injury. Wasn't that he couldn't play. I think people began to doubt whether or not he could play. But now we're starting to see. He's leading the league in rushing, 500 yards, averaging 5.7 yards a carry. And when you watch this brother play, this dude has got wheels. I mean, between right now, in my opinion, Darren McFadden, it's Adrian Peterson and Darren McFadden as the best running backs in the league. And watching AP play this past week against Arizona, that cat's on another level than a lot of guys. But I think it's AP and then everybody else. But I think Darren McFadden is at the head of that everybody else group right now. And he may join AP because I think he has a physical gift to join AP. Because again, this is another dual threat kind of guy. He can catch the ball out of the backfield, but he also is a hell of a runner. And the Raiders' passing game is looking good, I think, because of a lot of pressure that he takes off a guy like Jason Campbell, who is, again, a decent quarterback, not the greatest quarterback in the world. He'll make some mistakes. He's got talent, though. But he's making a lot of those guys out there's life very, very easy. This is a dude who at Arkansas – you know, there were questions about whether or not he could handle the NFL lifestyle, the money, because he's got like seven kids. He had seven kids when he came into the league. You know, I like to call him the Mac Daddy because his brother's got so many damn children.
Right, him and Cromartie.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We don't even want to get on Cromartie. When you can't name your kids, you got a problem, brother. But I think McFadden, over the last 2 years, last year he really broke out with almost a 1,200-yard season in just 13 games, averaging 5.2 yards a carry with seven touchdowns. And he also had 47 receptions for 500 yards. So he had a 1,600-yard season when you look at the total yardage. This year, I think he's on pace for more yards. And I think, you know, by the end of the season – this guy is going to – and he's only 24. And I think he's been in the league four. This is his fourth year in the league, and he's only 24 years old. So, you know, he's got the frame to hold up. This is a guy who I think will have that longevity. Now, if I were to kind of forecast a comparison, I see Sean Alexander in this dude as far as his running style. I think he's more explosive than Alexander for sure. I think he has – the kind of size to speed like an Adrian Peterson. I think those two guys have a very unique size to speed combination. There aren't a lot of players in the history of the game who I think are as, when you think about McFadden at 6'2", 210 pounds, with a build like him who can get going as fast as he can get going. But in his running style, I see a lot of Sean Alexander. I think he's going to be able to put up similar numbers to a Sean Alexander. You just hope he doesn't hit that wall like Alexander did. Because, again, he is only 24, and he's already been at this 4 years. Now, he doesn't have a whole lot of wear and tear on his body because, you know, he's had some early injuries. So, you know, each of his first two seasons, last season he had more carries than he had in his first two seasons combined. So last year he had 223 carries and 47 receptions. So, you know, in the first 2 years of his career, if you combine those numbers, they don't come to that many touches. But this is another guy who I see kind of climbing into that elite level. So those are two running backs. And you see it translating to their effect on their teams. I think that's the big thing for me. You know, this ain't about fantasy numbers. This isn't about, you know, who's putting up the best fantasy stats. What these guys are doing are translating into wins on the field for their team. Oakland is 3-2. They just got a huge victory against the Texans on the road. He didn't run well. But I guarantee his presence had an impact on their ability to win that game. And then you have Buffalo who you know, did in the Eagles. And we're going to get into that whole situation at some point tonight's show because, you know, we got to break that down. We got to get into that a little bit. But the Bills are 4-1. They're a game up in the division on the Patriots. And right now they got the inside track to win in the division because they do have that game advantage on the Patriots, still in that game in Foxborough. So, you know, both of these guys are having a huge impact. Now, I want to touch base with my man D-Wheels and see if he's on with us. D-Wheels, you there? Crickets. All right, so D-Wheels, we'll have him in when he gets a chance.
Crickets.
If I had a cricket soundbite, I'd have played it, man. I sure was looking for one. So when D-Wheels gets on, we'll have him holler at the people, as we always do. I got one more that I want to touch base on real quick. If you have one, I'll let you jump in, and then I'll bring mine in after that. You got another one you want to give to the folks out there?
I had McFadden as my other one, so you can go on and bring it home.
All right. So then the other one I have is the Milwaukee Brewers as an organization. I think as an organization they've somewhat turned a corner. Last year they missed the playoffs. The year before that they were in. They've done what they can. You know, it's small market baseball, so there's only so much you can do as far as maintaining your roster and keeping stars. They're going to lose Fielder at the end of this season. Right now, they have a golden opportunity with the Phillies and the Yankees fishing right now. You know, they're making plans for winter ball. With those two teams out of the picture, they have an opportunity to really capitalize and have one of those years where a small market team steps up and wins a title. It's going to be a small market team this year. I don't know if you count Detroit as a small market. They're kind of in between, but
yeah, they're payroll.
Yeah, when you're looking at it though, it's going to be a smaller market team this year. And to me, that's good for baseball. Looking at the Brewers, I think they've gone from kind of a good franchise to an elite-level franchise because I think they've done the work of setting themselves up to continue this run for maybe another year, maybe 2 years. They're going to lose Fielder because he's going to get paid, either by the Cubs or the Yankees. Somebody's going to pay him. I think wherever Pujols goes, he'll go the other way. You know, between the Cubs and the Yankees. If Pujols goes to Chicago, I think the Yankees are going to back up the truck for Prince. If Pujols winds up in New York, then I think the Cubs are going to back up the truck for Prince. So either way, I think he's going to get his money. I think he winds up in Chicago or in New York. Unless a team like the Dodgers or Anaheim the Angels get involved, those are also teams I can see with enough bread to throw at them. But Greinke's a great picture. He's only 27. They got him in tow for a minute. Gallardo, great pitcher. They got him on a Yeah, and he's only 25. So they got him in tow for a minute. You got a guy like Sean Markham, who is a solid pitcher. He didn't look so good the other night, but he's been solid most of the season. He had been solid most of the season. And then Randy Wolf, who's the vet, kind of the cagey veteran of the crew, who pitched well. They have some relief pitching. They got to figure out the whole K-Rod situation because he's on the hook for a lot of money, and I don't know if they want to pay him all of that because John Axford's the closer, and he's done a pretty good job of it this year. You know, I like what they've done. A lot of these guys have been in this organization for quite some time. This is a real homegrown team outside of guys like K-Rod and Greinke. Most of these guys have come up through the organization or been with the organization for quite some time. And that's why they play the way they play. They have a lot of fun out there. You know, you got a guy like Nigel Morgan who they brought in this year. He's brought a lot of personality to the team and helped kind of bring out some of the personality. Because he's a complimentary player, when a complimentary player is your most outgoing personality, because then it takes some pressure off the stars. When people are talking about Nigel Morgan's antics and not talking about Prince Fielder's hitting slump, or they're not talking about you know, Ryan Brown, as long as he's not doing nothing too crazy to take away from everything that's going on. But it galvanizes everybody, because then the stars can kind of be themselves. They don't have to put themselves, you know, be out of character. And I think that's what he allows for Prince and for Braun to do. You know, he kind of accentuates some of their goofiness. You know, this team is a lot like was the 04 Red Sox when they won the title, you know, how they were just a bunch of goofy guys. This team reminds me, and they have a feel of that team. That's a team I would compare them to. They don't have the veteran pitching that team had, but I think they have a similar profile when you talk about the big bat in the infield with Fielder, you know, comparing him to a big Poppy. And then you have the big bat in the outfield with Ryan Braun kind of playing that Manny role. Then they got a lot of support guys in between. So, you know, I like their chances. It's going to be interesting to see how the series plays out between them and the Cardinals.
Yeah.
But I think the Brewers have taken a step this year. And they've been taking this – they've been kind of getting towards this point for the last couple years. So it'll be interesting to see if they can keep this run going. They're in year three, you know, if they can they extend this out for two more years, and then what will it look like beyond then is what we'll have to see. And that'll determine their ability to kind of maintain some sort of longevity. But
when you see franchises like Milwaukee, what they're doing with the Brewers, it makes me appreciate it so much more, especially in a sport like baseball where there's no salary cap. There's, you know, it's not a level playing ground. You know, I almost compare it to, if you look at the NCAA basketball, look at what Butler's done the last couple of years. You know, you've got this mid-major who has played with the big boys for two or three straight years here. And it's not a level playing ground when you look at recruiting. You know, and I love baseball. You know, R.J. Page was on a couple of weeks ago, and we talked baseball for a while. But to me, they really need a salary cap, because every year they don't have it, you just lose fans. And at some point, you're going to lose a generation of fans, you know, because it's just not fair. And I'm the biggest Yankee fan out there, but it's just not fair. So when I see teams like Milwaukee doing what they're doing, to me, I have a lot more respect, because – you know, it's like they have the skills and the savvy to make it work with less.
I agree, and I think, you know, you look at the Brewers and organizations like the Twins, the Rays, the Marlins. You know, the Marlins kind of they'll build up a lot of assets. They'll get a lot of young talent into the program. They'll nurture that young talent. They'll get them up to the leagues. They'll coach them up. And then, you know, next thing you know, they win it. And they win it big. And then they sell them all off, and they start over again. And that's kind of been their model. Each team, you have to figure out a model that works for your particular franchise. You know, the Pittsburgh Pirates, their model is lose and keep losing. And keep losing. But you have teams like that who are just mired in not even mediocrity. They're just terrible. I mean, they're not even like the Blue Jays who – they just can't get past the Yankees and the Red Sox. It sucks when you're in a division with, you know, the two teams that spend the most money in a sport that is predicated on, you know, a lot of the winning is predicated on how much money you spend. So you have teams like the Orioles and the Blue Jays who, you know, the Blue Jays in particular, when you think about being mired in mediocrity, they're always decent. You know, or even my White Sox, you know. They're always decent. They're always in the mix. They're never that team, though. You know, the White Sox luckily got a World Series in 05, but they're never that team where it's like year in and year out, you can bank on them being in the mix. They're decent, but eventually they're going to have a losing streak or a hitting slump that's going to cost them the season because it's such a long season. And that's the way it goes. And then you have franchises like the Orioles and the Royals and the Pirates, who just can't seem to kind of turn around the culture to be able to actually put a winning product on the field. I mean, I remember growing up as a baseball fan, the Orioles were one of the best-run franchises
in the game. You know, you talk about the Oreo way and you know, that the kind of culture they had when Cal Ripken and all the guys that played with him were there. And you don't ever hear anybody talking about the Oreo way no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, the Orioles are kind of one of those franchises where it'll be a great day when they're relevant again, because I think, you know, that was fun. It was fun to have a team like the Orioles, you know, be relevant. And it's fun to have those kind of small market teams be relevant, because it creates – and it, like, you know, we're talking about the Buffalo Bills and the Oakland Raiders again. Teams we haven't talked about since the mid-90s. You know what I mean? Like, seriously. When you think about it, we haven't talked about these teams since we were playing Tecmo Bowl. You know, and you had the Jim Kelly-led Bills with Thurman Thomas and
Henry Jones. Yeah.
You know, Bruce Smith, Don Beebe, James Lofton, Andre Reed, all those guys. Yeah, and Henry Jones.
I mean, that guy was an enigma. I mean, he was a decent player in the league, but on Tecmo Bowl, if you threw it in his neighborhood, he was going to grab it.
Man, we may have to do that one show, man. We may have to compile a list of the best video game athletes ever.
That's right.
Because, you know, at least the best Tecmo Bowl cast, because you know, I know Jay Cutler thought Jerry Ball was on the field last night.
Yeah, Jerry Ball, boy, you go at that slant. Forget about it. He would just smooth slide right by the guard.
Right over your center.
That's right.
Your center be laying all flat, quarterback sacked. Oh, man. Yeah, we may have to do that one day. We may have to just run that down for people real quick.
Yeah.
Hey, gentlemen.
Scott Hastings.
Oh, yeah.
They used to play for the Pistons. Tecmo basketball, they just made him unbelievably well.
No, you know who was gangster on Tecmo basketball? Craig freaking Elo. I scored like 100 points in a game with Craig Elo just shooting three-pointers, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they had some guys on there who were monsters. And you know who else on Coach K basketball? Coach K basketball came out, Sega Genesis, early 90s.
Right.
The Michigan, the second-generation Fab Five, Gerard Ward, Maceo Baston, Maurice Taylor, Lewis Bullock. That team was on that game. None of those guys other than Lou Bullock could shoot threes. I would, man, ask Roger when you talk to him. Roger hated playing me with that team, man, because I would shoot turnaround. I wouldn't just shoot three-pointers. I would shoot turnaround three-pointers.
Right.
Like, I had Gerard Ward posting up at the three shooting fadeaway, turnaround, three-pointers, net.
Right.
So we'll have to get into that one day, but that's another show. It sounds like D Wheels is in the mix.
Yeah,
I'm in the mix, sir, gentlemen. It's just about transition life. But I did want to comment on the baseball. I was in Chicago and my wife had a conference out, and I actually ran into someone who was consulting with the Brewers, and we talked a lot about. And this must have been about 5 years ago. I think it was when Fielder was at Beloit. So he was playing down at Beloit, I think. And so, but one of the things we talked about in terms of the longevity of teams like the Brewers is that I always said you almost take the Steelers approach sometimes in baseball. You have to invest in your managers and your coaches. You have to invest in people who create a culture. Think about Leland in Detroit. People who can figure out how to squeeze everything out of players, because you're never going to be able to match up with the payroll of the Phillies, of the Mets. Mets haven't done anything, but of the Phillies, of the Yankees, of the Red Sox. But you can always pull together an investment of some key players like they have now, and you also have to invest in pitching, particularly today with all the push of steroids out of the game. Create a different kind of game, you know, pitching becomes even more important. And I think you can build up enough pitching. You can really work to fine pitching. You look at what La Russa is doing with his bullpen, you know, what managers can actually do in managing games and doing things differently and winning in different ways. So I think you really have to invest in that leadership, and you have to have a team philosophy that you're going to commit to, particularly when you're a small market team. And I think the Brewers have that. I think they have that quality because they're not going to dip that much. I mean, they're going to take a hit with Fielder leaving, but I think they've created a culture there of that they're going to try and find a way to win. And, you know, as long as they can challenge every 3 to 4 years, that's the kind of organization they're going to have. And I think the fans would be okay with that.
Yeah, I think they're in a good spot, and I think they have a plan. And, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, young people that I mentor, you know, kids, you know, teens, whatever you got to do, just have a plan. You know, if school ain't a part of that plan for you, cool. Tell me what your plan is, and I'll help you. If school ain't a part of it, I still help you figure out what you're going to do. You know, as long as you have a plan, you have some direction, and you can handle, you know, the different challenges and variables that get thrown at you as you're trying to work that plan. And I think losing Fielder is a variable that's going to come into play, but I think they've anticipated it. They've known that they're going to lose him. And, you know, I have a lot of faith in the guys running the show in Milwaukee that they have a contingency plan in case Fielder walks. You know, they're going to make an offer. It's not going to be.
But Fielder got to stop crying. He got to stop crying and being emotional. Like, you got a choice. If you really love it in Milwaukee,
yeah.
You ain't got to take that truck that's going to roll up to your house. You know, quit. After they won the first round
but
game,
he was crying,
putting his shirt over his head, getting emotional. And I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah, I ain't for all the crying and stuff.
You can't be crying when you know the truck's going
to
roll up.
He might love his guys, but at the end of it, you know, it's 2011. They a phone call away. You know, New York ain't that far. Chicago ain't that far.
Tell Nigel to step off Twitter. He better leave my boy down there in St. Louis alone. Get off that Twitter with the big fella down there with the big bat. He better tweet on tweet. And so it's good to be funny, but don't wake up a sleeping dog, a sleeping giant. So you know, somebody got to tackle his crazy looking. Take that big helmet off. Don't wake up the dog. But L Dog, he'd be with a text. He said Reggie Miller on NBA Live 99 is someone.
Oh yeah.
Said Reggie.
Oh yeah. Yep.
So y'all got people excited about the games.
Yeah, man, we may have to talk about that, man, because with the NBA lockout, the NBA 2K12 came out last week, which is, you know. Me and Phil go back to the first, and we still get down to NBA 2K, which is a classic.
Right.
You know, for Dreamcast, for all you old video game heads out there, y'all know what that is. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
NBA 2K for Dreamcast. This was late nights. And go ahead.
It's got a dial-up modem on the back, okay?
Oh, man, and I meant to send a shout-out, man. Our Vitas had a heart attack a couple weeks ago. Did you see that?
Really?
Oh. Yeah, Big Vitas had a heart attack a couple weeks ago, man. Mm-hmm. Not your Vitas, not my Vitas, but our Vitas.
Our Vitas.
Brother had a heart attack, man. Our Vitas Sabonis is a video game monster. I don't know why we didn't say our Vitas.
No.
This dude dominates in this video game. Offensively and defensively, this dude is. Now, our Vitas is a true game changer in this video game. You know, but NBA 2K12 came out. And now they have all these older teams on there. You know, you can play as the Run TMC Warriors. You can play as the GP and Rain Man Sonics. You can go back and play as with the Bill Russell Celtics, Dr. J Sixers, the 96 Bulls. So, you know, they've added some elements into it with some of these older teams that I think will be fun to play with. But, you know, when you talk about NBA Live 99 and Reggie Miller and those Pacers squads with Smits and McKee and all those guys out there, you know, it brings back fond memories. So, you know, shout out to L Dog for throwing that one out there, because that's a good one. Because Reggie was a bad man on that one.
Absolutely.
You had to pick him up at half court, because you could.
Yeah.
I mean, literally a couple of steps across, and he was jagging on you.
Right. Do you want to double team him? Yes. With or without the ball? Without the ball, yes.
Always.
Always.
Right. In the post, without the ball. Always. Always.
The thing I want to throw in about the Brewers is. You know, the Brewers, they had an interesting decision because you know, they could have done what a lot of teams do. When they got a guy that they know they're not going to re-sign, they get rid of him either before the season or during the playoff race. You know, and I think a lot of people at the time were encouraging them to get rid of Fielder during the offseason because they knew it was a good chance the Brewers might be in the race if you keep them. And then, you know, you can't get rid of them and you're not going to get anything back. But I think it's kind of interesting that the Brewers say, you know what, we're going to take our shot. We're going to take our shot. And I think looking back, it was certainly the right decision to make.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, hindsight is 20/20, as we always say. But it was absolutely the right decision. Because of and the way things played out have you know, proven that. That this is what, you know, they're in a position to make, really make some headway and make some things happen in these playoffs. So what we're going to do right now, we're going to transition into five on the black hand side. So let's get into that real quick. You know, again, listeners out there, if you want to get on at any time with the Real Sports Guys, feel free to call in at 1-347-989-084. For five on the black hand side this week, we are going to get into kind of, I call this the this all went wrong edition. So we got five different situations that just seem to have totally gone wrong across sports, and we're going to get into that real quick. And we're going to talk about why they went wrong, where they went wrong, and how. So, you know, let's get into that real quick.
Five on the black hand side.
Hey, I know you bobbing your head with the you really can't help it. I know I can't at this point. I just do it, not even thinking about it anymore. All right, five on the black hand five. This is all wrong edition. First up, we got to take it there. The Philadelphia Eagles. We kind of got into this last week. We really got to dig into this situation because it went from bad to it went from okay, this is not where we want to be, but we can still kind of, you know, make things right to DEFCON 5 level. Over this past weekend, as they lost to the Bills on the road. It is not so much that they lost to the Bills, because I think the Bills are a quality team, and I think people are starting to see that and recognize that they can play with anybody in this league right now. They've proven that by beating the Eagles and the Patriots. But it's the way they lost. I don't know. I think they had 5 or 6 turnovers, drop passes, bad throws, poor clock management, penalties, all of these things, it just looks like a team in disarray. So, you know, I kind of called this, and I won't say I completely called this, because I expected them to be good. I expected them to be good, but I did say that I thought Asamoah was going to be an overrated signing. And I did think that the Eagles were going to take a little bit of time for them to hit their stride. Now, did I think they were going to be 1-4? Hell no. You know, I thought worst case scenario is that they're 2-2, 2-3 at this point in the season. You know, and that would have made sense to me. I could have saw that scenario playing out. And I also said that I thought Mike Vick was going to struggle a little bit this year. You know, I didn't think he was going to have the success that he had last season. Last season, you know, you have probably the most difficult player in the history of the game to game plan for in Michael Vick. And teams had no time last year to game plan for him. I mean, no time. They didn't have, because he had been out of the game. He had been in the clink for a minute. You know what I mean? Brother been locked up for a minute. So there was no film unless somebody was, you know, taking footage of him throwing passes, you know, on cell block C. But I don't think there was any, I don't think, you know, he was facing a cover two, you know, in the mess hall. So there was not a lot of footage to study from. And we've seen it time and time again where a quarterback will have a breakout season 1 year. We're seeing it kind of with Josh Freeman, where they have a breakout season 1 year. Everybody in the league gets a book of tape on them. And then the next year, it's a little bit harder. And I think that's what we're seeing with Mr. Vick out there with QB Eagles out there in Philly. But then I think there's another culprit who's more to blame. then and to me that's the man in charge, and that's Andy Reid.
You got that right.
And with that said, I'm gonna pass it to you guys and let y'all dig in on that. Andy Reid.
I'll jump in.
Go ahead.
Because y'all been holding down. Y'all, that first segment, I heard I couldn't get on real quick, but I was have to say y'all crushed that first segment in terms of the elite players or rising players. So I got to contribute something to the show. I feel like I'm just kind of working on y'all coattails. So I'm gonna try my best on this.
Towel waving.
I'm gonna have to start doing something here to catch up, but. Y'all know how I feel about this. There's a couple things. You can upset the universe. Walk with me with this. Certain moves just have a ripple effect. So what are the two areas they're struggling the most? They're struggling up the middle. They're struggling on the offensive line. They're struggling on the defensive line. They're struggling with defensive scheme. And before I can even judge the players, I always start to look. I look at the scheme first because everything goes back to system. If the scheme is broken, if it's junk in, it's junk out. And so what does Andy Reid do? Okay, so we have a lockout at a time when you need stability, and the teams who have done well maintain their stability, came in with a really solid plan. He moves his talented offensive line coach, who's never been a defensive coordinator at this level, to defensive coordinator. Now, if that were anybody else, if Al Davis, bless his soul, had done this, we'd be ripping him. If he had suggested to his coach to do that, we'd be ripping him. But it's Andy Reid, and nobody even – this isn't Pop Warner. This is like, you know, you pull your cousin Jed over to the other side of the ball, and nobody just notices. This is the NFL. You move an offensive line coach who, from what I hear, is a pretty good, talented offensive line coach. To defense. So now you affect two areas that are important. Your offensive line, which is struggling, and probably the best person to fix it is now calling the Y9. And then now you still haven't gotten to the point where you understand on offense, the best way to save your offensive line is to run the football. If you've been around offensive linemen, they like to lather it up. Give them something they can win on. And so Andy does something. He puts people in harm's way a lot. I think he put Mike Vick in harm's way. I think by his play selection, he puts them in harm's way because it's easy to kind of figure out what they're doing because they're not going to commit to running the ball. And now you got a defense that usually covered up mistakes and put you in a position. Now they're all messed up. So I put this totally at Andy Reid. And I like Andy Reid. That's the killer. But I think my only thing about him is that he's never committed to the things that you know that takes wins championships. He never committed to running football some. Like, he don't run it at all. And he's making decisions like this that make you think, is he drinking? Is he smoking? Did we gonna find he has a substance abuse problem? You know, just doesn't make sense to anybody who knows football. Now he's talking about bringing a consultant in for defense. No, what you know you should do? You should find the best defensive guy you got over in defense, somebody who's been around defense the whole time over there. Make them the coordinator. Move your coordinator back to the offensive line. Have them help you fix this offensive line.
Yeah, I frequent a lot of sports websites, and I did see a lot of Eagles fans questioning that move when it happened. You know, I didn't know what to think of it. I usually trust that the football coach knows his football staff, his personnel better than I do since I'm not around them. but a lot of Eagles fans were shaking their heads and, you know, scratching their heads and wondering what kind of sense did this particular move make in regards to bolstering the weaknesses of this team. But also, you take an offensive guy and you put him at defensive coordinator, that's an integral position.
Yeah.
And I think you made a great point, D. Wills, in talking and pointing out how they kind of weakened two areas of their team with one move. And they didn't do very much to bolster themselves up the middle, you know.
No.
And that is where they're being hurt right now. They can't protect Vic as fleet of foot as he is. There's only so far you can run, man. There's only so far you can run. So it's, you know, QB Eagles is in trouble. the Eagles organization is in trouble, and I agree. I think a lot of this falls on Andy Reid. You know, they invested too much on the perimeter and not enough on the gut of that team. But I'm going to let Phil T, Sports PhD, weigh in real quick. What's your assessment of the situation, brother?
My assessment is the same as y'all. What the heck was he thinking?
That I don't know, my man. I can't, seriously. I mean, I don't understand. You figured that, again, you gave him the benefit of the doubt because he has a track record of success. But at the same time he has that track record of success, I think D. Willis, you pointed out, he also has a track record of ignoring some key elements of the game all through the Brian Westbrook years. And when McNabb and Westbrook were there, you know, he never really committed to running the ball. He threw the ball a lot. And when they had weapons, they did well. But even during those years, they had a solid offensive line, and they had a strong defense. And they had a defense with an identity. I don't even know what to – I mean, if you tried to if you were to describe the Eagles' defense from 2 or 3 years ago, you say they play a lot of man coverage, they blitz a lot, they get after you, they hit your quarterback, aggressive pass rush, you know, all of those things you would say they're fast, small linebackers, but they're quick, they're decent in coverage. All of those are adjectives and things that you would say to describe the Eagles' defense. Now I really don't know what you say except for they're soft. They're extremely soft. And the other piece of this is the Osmore signing, as much as it raised the profile of the team, when you got a guy who considers himself an Asante Samuel and who's fairly temperamental, who fancies himself as a top-level corner, a shutdown corner, and he's in a contract year looking for a contract, you trade Carr for DRC, who's a young guy coming in, just had a lot of success in Arizona, is trying to establish himself as a shutdown corner. And then you bring in the shutdown corner, if not the other shutdown corner in the league, you know, 1 and 1A between him and Revis and Asamoah. You're creating bad chemistry in your locker room. So when you have a situation where your team is 1-4, it's even that much more difficult to rebound. It's even that much more difficult to turn it around. Because now, when do they get to the point where they start pointing fingers? Because it's not – to me, it doesn't strike me as an extremely tough locker room. And it's a group of guys who have kind of just come together. You know, Vic has only been there for a minute. Vic has only been leading that team for a minute. They're young on offense. Macklin's in his second or third year. Jackson's in his third or fourth year. Shady McCoy's in his third or fourth year. So all of those guys are still fairly young. There isn't a whole lot of veteran leadership in that locker room on either side of the ball. There's no Brian Dawkins. There's no Trotter. That was Jeremiah Trotter. He's not walking through the doors. You know, they don't have, you know, the corners that they used to have who were leaders. You know, the Troy Vincents and the Bobby Taylors, guys like that. Those guys aren't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't even have Donovan, who at least had, you know, for all of his flaws as a personality, and but he was a leader. And he had guys who had his back. You know, the John Runyons on the offensive line. Guys like that ain't there no more. So who's going to step up and take that blame and get this team going in the right direction?
You know, I think is that there's a philosophical issue, and you guys hit on it. You know, I compare them to the Phoenix Suns in the NBA. They have a system, theoretically, that can win you games, that can get you into the playoffs most years. But when it gets down to it, in that divisional round, wild card round, whatever it is, you need to be able to run the ball effectively. And that's where Andy Reid's teams have always struggled. Both of you guys hit on that. And, you know, I'll be the first one to say, listen, I thought the Eagles were going to be a playoff team. I didn't buy into the whole dream team thing because it doesn't translate well into football. But there's no way I thought they were going to be 1-4 and seriously in danger of making the playoffs. But even if they were to be clicking on all cylinders, you know, I mean, it's almost like smoke and mirrors a little bit in terms of how you get it done. You know, I mean, you look at Green Bay. No, they're not running the ball very well, but they're running it adequately. And last year, I mean, think about what James Starks did in the championship game, in the NFC championship game. They ran the ball very effectively. So, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but if I have to point a finger at one thing that has held them back, I mean, all those NFC championship games they made it to, you know, three or four of them or so when Donovan was there, to me it still comes back to not having a bully of a running game to get it done. And I don't see that changing any. You know, I thought bringing in Ronnie Brown would be a good mix, but the way that Andy calls the plays, you can't really mix in two running backs, you know, and get them quality carries. Yeah, I mean, you just can't because, you know, to Andy, the short passing game is a fill-in to the running game. And, I mean, that works. That works, but not to the point where it's championship time, in my opinion.
And I think – And I think y'all hit it right on the head that he thinks the passing game is a substitute for the running game. But the one thing about running, and you saw a little bit with the Lions, even though you're passing, that when you break long runs, it demoralizes, and that's part of the physical running game does that allows you to break people's will, and it also allows you to play more high percentage offense. It's the kind of thing that would make Vic more effective because he could play action off of it. You could roll off of it. And so there's so much more you could do with Vic when people have to pay attention to run. And it's not like you don't have a good running back. That's the killer. You got a guy who can take it to the house at any time, and you don't give him enough touches in it, and that kills me. And the other thing on defense is that they got these man-to-man covers, but sometimes you watch them, they play in zone. So when you're not stopping the run, you're not walking your safeties up to help with the run. You got corners who can cover. You know, utilize that and get some of these cats up in the box. And the only way you can play that wide nine, and I argued stuff about Michigan last year when people were talking about gas head scheme is everything. You can't play something like that when you don't have elite linebackers and great front folks. If you got Sue up there up front, you can play the wide nine. Because he can just destroy a whole side of a line. But when you don't have those kind of – you still have folks who haven't been proven on the inside. And so sometimes I look at these coaches, and sometimes it's inexperience of a coach that can outthink himself and not really think about his personnel because he's not maximizing it. He's got these cover guys, but I don't see 8-9 in the box when you're not stopping a run with these corners that you got out. You just leave them out on the island. I would rather you do that. Leave them on the island. Look, I paid you all that money. You got no help over the top. We got to stop the run. And you got to go after that. But I don't see any of that. And Andy, you know, Andy's like a second-term president or like a first-term president. Should I give him a second term? He let everybody know that he bring the consultant in, like the vice president won't be on the ticket next year. You know, he in that mode right now. We won't have the same cabinet next year. You know what I'm saying? He moved to politician mode, you know, so he still get them both for confidence. He just, oh, my goodness. I feel sorry for Vic because everybody blaming Vic, and I look at it, I'm just like, this is a terrible game plan. I hate to say it.
I mean, Michael Vick's doing what he needs to do. Now, he had four turnovers this past weekend, but in general, if you look at his numbers, I mean, his numbers are okay. I mean, you can't point at him, you know, when the offense is putting up 25 to 35 points a game, you can't point at the quarterback and say he's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
You can't.
Yeah, I mean, the last 2 weeks he's accounted for over 400 yards of offense.
Yeah.
You know, so, hey, QB Eagles is holding it down. I think it's just an untenable situation out there. I mean, what else can you say about it? It's going to get worse before it gets better. Maybe this is the worst of it. But I don't know. I think there's more to come. I want to transition into the next team or the next situation that we have to talk about, and that is Jay Cutler and the Chicago Bears. Detroit beat that ass last night. There's really no other way to put it. I mean, you talk about a team getting – it was one of those demoralizing losses where you look around and guys are just not giving it what they got. And it's unfortunate. Now, It's interesting because I talk to a lot of Bear fans. I grew up in Chicago. I follow the Bears. I consider myself a Bear fan just as much as I consider myself a Packer fan.
Wow.
Watching the Bears, I know, right? It's a weird thing I got going on, but I'm dealing with it. You know, I go to therapy every you know once a month, and you know me and my therapist are working through that. You know,
good.
But in the same sense, in the same breath, two or three years ago, Jay Cutler was viewed as a young quarterback who was on a trajectory to be a top five guy. After that time that he spent in Denver, he was coming off a Pro Bowl year. He threw about 28 to 30 touchdowns, 4,000 yards passing. He looked like he was going to be a guy who could carry a franchise. He looked like a surefire franchise quarterback. Fast forward to now, and he looks lost. He looked like Tecmo Bowl Jerry Ball was out there. I mean, he snaps the ball and he's immediately running for his life.
I was saying Cutler's defense last night. I think Cutler kept him in the game last night. I thought he made some great plays. I thought he played a great game.
I'm not faulting Cutler at all. What I'm saying is this is a guy who seemed to be a solid commodity, a solid investment in this situation is not working out. I don't think that's his fault.
Maybe I wasn't right on that, but
I don't think it's necessarily Cutler's fault. You know, I don't think it's his fault he's running for his life. You know, I think there's some play calling issues. I think there's systemic issues. I think there's some issues with his receivers.
For me, the line has been a problem. The defense is now aging. I mean, the defense has been good for 10 years, but cats get old. It happens. It's life, you know. This whole aging thing, it happens to human beings. It's real. It's not like global warming. It's not something that's debatable. Cats get old. So, is
the clock ticking on Lovey? Is the seat warming up?
It's ticking on Lovey because I got to say this, and Mike Marks, I will say to him about this, he's committed to the run much more than I thought he would. But other than the best show on turf, which was the right circumstance with the right head coach, right whole bunch of stuff, Mike Marks' offense, which is the same reason we just said, I think Phil was great. I would call Mike Marks' offense, he's like D'Antoni. It looks good. It plays well. It don't win games the way you need to do it. When you look at the Detroit Lions, they're built in the old Jim Finks way, on both sides of the line, dominating. They got 6-7 deep in linemen. Everybody's looking for linemen. If you're looking for them, they're all in Detroit. Every Pro Bowl lineman you need in Detroit. And so you got this combination. And one of these things, the thing that makes coaches great. Are what also is their gift and their curse, their refusal to adapt. And that's one thing I love about Belichick is that he will adapt. Where Lovey's been doing his Tampa 2, but he refuses or he can't find a way to make those adjustments for the aging defense, play a little bit more man, do some different things that don't allow you to be so predictable. You know, guys are just one step in that. Because that relies so much on gap responsibility, it reminds, you know, Urlacher has to get to so many different spaces to make up. You don't have great safety play. I don't see them adapting on defense to cover up and to do some different things. So I don't see that at all. And then on offense, I mean, Cutler's got pieces, but – and I love Forte. I mean, Forte was going to be one of the guys
that's
there.
I think he's
an elite player. That's all he has. And part of it is, they just don't have those other pieces in place. And I think this is it for Lovey. I mean, I defended him last year, but, sometimes the honeymoon's over. You know, I just don't see Lovey coming back and doing something different next year. I think it's run his course.
And we got Ray joining us real quick, and I want him to weigh in on this situation because he's living out in Bear Country, down in the State Line area. we talking right now, Ray. We talking about Cutler and the Bears situation. Where do you put the fault in what's going on out there? Because, you know, when you lose like that, you know, even though they won the week before, you know, it was probably a game that they maybe shouldn't have won the week before.
Right.
What do you make of the Bears right now?
Well, right, I look at the Bears tonight.
Playing chili.
I look at the Bears and I see the biggest fault to me is that that offensive line for the Chicago Bears. You know, you're talking about what they do on defense, and a lot of what they do is sometimes opportunistic. Like Dee says, there's so many spots that Urlach has to cover on the field that over the course of a game, if he's going to be out there as long as he's going to be out there, he's going to get beat. And I think that when you spend the kind of money that they spent on Cutler and then didn't build around him at all, you know, maybe you know, as much as Peppers has been an impact on that team, you know, you have to wonder at times if that money would have been better spent, you know, making sure that they had an offensive line and some true receivers to throw the ball to. As far as Forte and as far as March's offense, if you look at Forte's numbers, you know, Forte's got some Marshall Faulk looking numbers. So
that's
some
right.
of the pieces, some of the pieces are there. And success could be just around the corner if they evaluate that team and say, okay, you know, where are our true weaknesses and where are we going to spend our money, you know, from here on out? You know, you're right, and they spend a lot of money on Cutler and they expect big things. I think that by not giving him, you know, a stable offensive line, you're not going to get what you need out of it. And they do need a true you know, they could use a true superstar receiver. Or make sure that you've got enough offensive line that you develop one. That young kid Knox is one of those players that, you know, is he, you know, could he be the next Isaac Bruce if you know, the offensive line gives Cutler enough time to make a play? Cutler's coming right off of that center and right into scramble mode. And, you know, you can't use last night as you know, the true litmus test, because that Detroit Lions, you know, rush is, you know, that, to me, I'm going to have to go back to, you know, write it down, Phil. You know, he kind of called that out. I didn't realize that the Detroit Lions were going to be as explosive as they are on both sides of the ball. I realized that if Stafford can, you know, keep upright, you know, they had a chance to win some ball games, but, you know, that's a legitimate team. And that, to me, last night was the difference. You know, I saw what the Bears did last year. We talked about this earlier, you know, a couple weeks ago. You know, are the Bears a legitimate team? And I just think they had some great circumstances last year, won a lot more ball games than they probably should have. And this year, that's kind of showing itself out.
And I would say that, you know, they haven't – you remember when the Bears' defense was great? It was all, they were like kind of like Detroit. They had interior linemen that just kept bringing them in.
Yeah.
Like, all of them were good. You remember that? It was like, who's this?
Sure.
They were all good. And for some reason, that interior line, those tackles, are not doing anything. And they have never done anything about that. So it's kind of like we just said about Philadelphia. They fixed everything on the outside. And they never did anything with the interior linemen, and so that was the difference against Detroit was that they had the domination up the middle. Chicago just – you can't tell me who's dominated on the interior for Chicago in the last 2 years.
Let me go back, because I was listening into some of those comments on Philly, and I hate to go back, but I do gotta say, you know, last year when the Packers lost their starting running back, I was angry that they didn't go out and get another running back, because you know you have to establish that run. If you really want that passing game to work, I don't care who you have behind center. And to just go back on a comment that, you know, that needed to be really stressed with that Philly situation, is that Andy Reid does not attempt to establish the run. And I say that going back to last year's Packers, even with the makeshift running backs that they had, they still ran the football. On first down, you could expect them to run the football. And then they'd bang you a little bit, you know, with a short pass or even a deep pass. when you kind of relax and say, well, we can stop the run doing it this way. Or, you know, they just simply passed on you when you thought that they were going to run the football. Andy Reid just threw, you know, he throws the running game right out of the window. His running backs had to catch the ball. They have to be part of the passing game. It's not even fair to call them running back. But that's all I'll say about that. You know, that's part of Philadelphia's problem is that Andy Reid does not believe in the running game. It's a shame because that they are going to be as successful as his fault.
That's it. And Marcus, I was going to add to your Cutler comments as well. I think Lovey threw the baby out with the bathwater because he had Olsen, he had Forte,
yep.
He had Cutler. You know, if you're using the old Dallas Cowboys, you know, Emmitt, Aikman, and then you need the receiver, right? and they got Gabe Carini, right? So they got some linemen. They started to make some things go, and then they went to this totally different direction that isn't really Chicago Bears kind of football. So you don't really see like a physical pounding. And I said, you got to be what your elements allow you to be. If you're in Chicago, you have to build a team that's going to be pounding people in October, November, and December, January.
Sure.
And that team out there, that team out there I don't see as a – I see them being at disadvantage sometimes in December and January with the offense they run. And so it felt like they threw everything out on offense when they didn't really need to. When they had a young Olsen who by all estimation, all assessment, has the potential of being a Pro Bowl type tight end. And that's the kind of thing you need for a guy like Cutler. So I think, you know, in desperation, you know, Lovey brought his boy in because he's like, wait, if I got one gun, I guess that's how it is. I guess I would do the same thing. I bring Phil T in. I might bring Game Changer. I'll bring my boy in. Now, you know, that's how you do it when your back is against the wall. He brought his old roommate in. So, but I think Cutler has potential in the right office. I just don't like that he's not emotional enough. So I think there are times in that Detroit game, he could have been lifting his team up, and he could have been in people's face a little more animated in the huddle, that he was just kind of sitting there glass. You know, he wasn't really pushing them, and I just know that's not him. But they need somebody who can do that.
They need something.
I'm waiting for
that's
for
evident.
Lovey to come out. I'm waiting for Lovey to come out and say, just like he said about Rex, Rex is my quarterback, you know. I'm waiting for Lovey to come out and say, Jay is my quarterback. You know, I'm waiting for him to just come out and say that.
And how do you think that makes Jay feel that Lovey won't come out and say that? He said that about Rex. You can't say that about me. You can say that about Rex, but you can't go to bat for me? How do you think Cutler feel about that? I'm sure he feels a certain type of way about that. So we're gonna train. We're going to keep it rolling. We're going to get off the Bears. Guess what time it is, so it's Tebow time. Time to talk about Tim Tebow. It's one of those things. You bring that up in the barbershop and everybody throw their hands up in the air. Oh, hell.
You got to bring his ass up.
Right.
You're going to let him alone, you know.
Oh man, so what's up, man? I mean, what's going on in Denver? Do they really think that bringing in Tim Tebow is going to turn around the fortunes of this team? If I had to vote on that, if I had to put some money down, you know, if I had to drop a dub as to whether or not, if you got a guess on the mindset of John Fox and John Elway and the guys running the show in Denver, do I really think they think Tebow's the answer? I have to say, anybody with a pair of eyeballs got to say no. And a man with one eyeball still says no. And a blind man listening to the defense lick their chops when he come in the game would still put a dub down on no, he is not the answer. But I'm just one man. So I'm going to toss it out to the guys. I'm going to start with Phil T and let him weigh in on this, and then we'll all take our turns and we'll go around the horn with it. So Phil T, to Tebow or not to Tebow? That is the question.
Oh, are we going to be Tebowing? Okay, it's out there. It's
it's out there. And when they replaced him on Sunday, like when they replaced Orton and put him in, I mean, there was just no turning back. You know, even if he stunk it up, the fans would have rationalized it to the point where they still wanted him to play. And but, you know, I mean, this situation is different because, you know, a lot of times the backup quarterback is the most popular guy. We've all seen this throughout our lifetime. But with Tebow, it just takes on a whole different meaning. You know, I mean, I was a fan of the guy at Florida. I mean, I wasn't a super fan like I was Charlie Ward a few years ago, well, I guess a bunch of years ago, but I was a fan of Tebow. Because he's a winner, you know. I mean, people have an issue with some of the things he's, you know, his spirituality and religion. People have an issue with that oftentimes, but he's a winner on the field. And he doesn't have that traditional mold. But I think in the right system, he can be successful. And that leads me to my primary point. I don't think he's in a very supportive system. Elway and Fox, they pretty much handle this about as bad as you can. Most reports out of Denver saying that they did their best to really undermine the guy and his ability, and they don't have a lot of confidence in him. At this point, it seems like the media and the fans have forced their hand to put this guy in to see what he could do. You know, I compare him to Cam Newton. And, I mean, based on what Cam's done, I don't think it's as strong of a comparison as it would have been if we would have been making this comparison a few months ago.
Not at all.
I bring it up because I think Cam is in the right situation. And I don't say that because I think it's only one situation where Cam could be successful. I think there's plenty of situations that Cam could be successful. But, you know, I think of Aaron Rodgers versus Alex Smith. Rodgers is a talented guy, but I'm not sure how successful he would have been had he been drafted and would have been playing in San Francisco. And unfortunately, I see that more happening with Tebow. I just don't see that he's in the right situation to be as successful as he could be. At this point, I don't see the team winning a ton of games anymore, but I think that he'll give them as good a shot to win. I'm not sure if it would be better as Gordon, but I think they'll still win, you know, maybe 5 or 6 games tops.
The Wills. Phil T laid out some pretty solid points. I want you to react to some of the things Phil T said. Where do you stand with that particular synopsis of the situation?
Well, I think, you know, as usual, Phil captured all the salient points. But I would say that I think he's right. I think it's not a supportive system. They didn't really want him. But I think the only way you can do is let it crash and burn. Sometimes in sports, when you're in a situation like this, as an organization, sometimes you got to let it crash and burn. If the kid rise like the phoenix, you win. If he crash and burn, you win. You win either way. and I think that was a decision, because that's what I would do. When I said I thought about this, I like, the only way you can do is, no matter what it works, it's going to be the point where fans almost have to bang down your door to make them take Tebow out. They say, we've seen enough. No, you're going to see more. They're going to call it, you know, by week 9, they were like, maybe you're right. No, you're going to see more. You got to beat it out of them. Beat it out of the fans. And I think that's what the situation. I just feel sorry for the veteran players and some of the people. But, you know, you got to play better. You got to play better if you don't want this scenario. But, like, I think they handled – Denver did the worst thing in this. They should have traded him or got whatever they could for it, allowed themselves to move on a little bit. And Brady Quinn is probably a better option for this right now. But, you know, Brady's just out there, like, collecting a paycheck.
Yeah, man, they lead the league in former tarnished Golden Boys on their roster between those two. But maybe that's what they got to do, and maybe you and Phil T are on to something with this guy. Is that, you know, I like D. Will's perspective. You know, be careful what you wish for.
That's right.
You just might get it. You know, all that chance for Tebow, All right, we're going to throw his ass out there. Now you get to see what we see every day in practice. And shut the hell up. This is what you wanted.
Right? Wow. You rarely have an opportunity like that in sports. You rarely have it.
Yeah.
I'm like that parent that kid asks, can I stay up? Can I stay up all night? Can I stay up all night? And Devon finally says, okay. And now the kid wants to fall asleep around midnight, but Devon's waking him up. Nope, you got to stay up.
You want to be grown. You want to be grown.
Right.
I mean, how many opportunities do you have? Do you have that perfect storm where the fans don't quite, they don't think you're going to make the playoffs. They don't think, they're not expecting you to make the playoffs. The fans have conceded the playoffs. But this is a perfect storm. You never have an opportunity like this to show fans really what they think. Give them what they want. And you still don't lose any ground. I love it.
Yeah, I like Tebow's running ability. I just don't trust Tebow as a thrower, man. I feel bad for Brandon Lloyd and Eric Decker and all the receivers out there because I just don't feel good about this cat tossing a rock around.
But therein lies the problem. When you bring John Elway in any capacity in that offense, John Elway is going to want a quarterback that's like John Elway. They're going to want to run an offense like John Elway ran an offense. And Tim Tebow's not that guy, you know, so is it fair to Tim Tebow? He has talent. It's just not in what they're going to want to try to do. Now, so Devon's medicine to make Elway look right is to shove this poor little bastard you stick in a square peg in a round hole just to prove a point. It's not fair to Tebow. It's not fair to the other guy. They had an opportunity to try to trade him. They had an opportunity to try to just even cut him. There's nothing wrong with saying this isn't the quarterback for us. The quarterback we need, you know, is a drop back quarterback, you know, that isn't so prone to running the ball, and go with it, you know. But they're trying to save face for having picked his ass up to begin with. It's a really sad situation. They made a mistake. Tim Tebow's still playing the same football. He knows how to play.
What they could have done is done the slash thing. So they could have come in with a season, with a package for him already, done the slash thing. It allowed him to get used to playing quarterback. Because I thought the way they brought Cordell Stewart along early on was the right way. Let him play a little bit of quarterback, let him do a little bit of other things, you know, and they kept adding to his snaps.
Right.
So they could get in advance in the package.
You know, and remember when Tebow was coming out of college, there were so many scouts saying, look, you know, we don't know that this kid's going to play quarterback. He might be on the scout team. He might be on special teams. You know, they should have asked
him. But he can do stuff with the ball in his hand. I mean, you put the ball in his hands, and he makes things happen with his legs. That's for sure.
Exactly.
I don't know how.
Sure.
He doesn't look like he's fast.
Sure.
But the kids got some running instincts that are excellent. He can run the ball. I like that part of his game. I don't back and throwing the ball.
But if you're not going to run a Wildcat-type offense, he might not be the guy to have around because you aren't going to have him. You aren't going to fit him into that Elway mode. But again, go back to Tebow. You know, Tebow wasn't receptive to playing another role, lining up in the slot, playing a bit of tight end, doing some other things drafted as a quarterback. You know, you know he wants to play quarterback, and I think that goes back to, you know, all of that scouting before the combine, you know, during the combines and everything else. This is what we're going to have you do. Can you do this? We plan on drafting you in this round. If you're still available, we're going to give you a chance. You know, and that's part of Denver's problem is the fact that they haven't come right out and just said, look. You know, Tebow has talents. We have to figure out how to get him on the field. We are going to pay him. He's going to have to play this role. He's going to have to accept it. You know, I don't care. They said, look, Tim, go ask your God what you should do. Because if you're not going to follow, if you're not going to follow with him, you and your God are going to have to go somewhere else. I'll pick up the phone, and I'll make that call for you, you know.
You cold, right? You cold.
But then, hey, I'm trying to get into his head. I'm trying to make him think about what I want him to do. You know, I'm giving you the option. You know, you've got to give him that sporting chance. And then, but see, it still falls back on Denver. These questions should have been answered before they start turning over that little dial. You know, the clock is ticking, and you jump up and say, Tim Tebow. What the hell are you saying Tim Tebow for? You ain't got no use for him. You ain't talking to him about this. You know, you ain't got this written in stone. Tim, can you come in and do this? Yes. Tim Tebow, that's what we're taking.
I think you guys are right on. I think right now the approach in Denver is, all right, let's just get this over with. Put the boy out there. He's either going to sink or swim. Either way, we're moving on at the end of the season. Because
yeah,
I think Elway want to take his illegitimate son and Andrew Luck. I think he eventually wants to, complete the circle of life, you know, and draft Andrew Luck to Denver, another Stanford QB coming in and save their franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I think ultimately that's what Elway wants to do. Deep down in his heart, that's what he wants to happen.
Sure.
And I think as an organization, they figure, again, it's the whole day. You got your kid, you want to smoke some weed? Okay, we're going to smoke all day.
Right.
You really want this? I'm going to give it to you. And we're going to just, you're going to get it. Well, I told you didn't want to see it. You didn't want this to happen.
Right.
You're going to get it. At the end of this day, right, at the end of the season, the Denver fans are going to get it. And they're either going to, you know, the team can say, look, we gave him a try. He didn't work out. We didn't win. And we're moving on.
But look at,
and I think that's just what they need to do.
But look at what they're doing, you know. Right? They're going to have to release him, you know, because – there isn't a team in the NFL that has just said, look, I'll give you my third-round pick for him. You know?
You can get a GM to come up off a pack of cigarettes for Tim Tebow.
There you go. You know? And even if he went to his guy and said, look, I'll sell peanuts. I'll do anything you want me to do now. You know? That's what he's going to have. He's going to be stocking shelves like Kurt Warner and get his chance somewhere else.
I think one point that Phil T brought up, and after this I'm going to let this die and we're going to move on to the next one. But I think a key point that Phil T brought up that I think is overlooked in the development of a guy like Tebow, and then when you contrast it with a guy like Cam Newton, is that it seems that in Carolina, whatever they were going to run for an offense, whatever they was going to do for the offensive scheme, they threw all that shit out the window and said, look, we got Cam Newton. This guy is a one-of-a-kind talent. We're going to do what we need to do to make him look good, period.
That's right.
That was a running team. That was a running team, a franchise that had hung their hat on being able to run the ball with those two great running backs that they have. And, you know, last week, D'Angelo Williams, your guy, Filthy, he went off for 100 yards on like 8 to 10 carries. I don't know how many carries he had, but he didn't crack 15, you know? And they're running everything out of the shotgun, and so when you look at a team like Carolina and what they did for Cam Newton, I mean, they're in the shotgun probably 60-70% of the time. But that's what Cam is good at. That's where Cam is comfortable. Instead of saying, let's get this guy under center, let's make him drop back, to hell with that. Aaron Rodgers is in the shotgun 70% of the time too. It worked for him.
Right, that's, you know, going back to Cordell Stewart, once they realized how this young man can play, then the whole offense came, you know, full circle. Once they realized what they had for, as far as the talent, now, you know, he went from being, you know, a project to being a hell of a quarterback.
And I know you want to finish up, and the one thing I will say is nobody cared whether or not Hines Ward wanted to play quarterback in the pros.
Right.
And
that's
so...
Right.
You know, they knew he was talented. And so, you know, I think at some point someone has to convince, because Tebow's talented, and you could play him at an H-back. You could do some things. You might put him and do some things at quarterback, because the one thing about Cordell Stewart people don't really think about is that if you're a defensive coordinator, even though you got 15, 20 plays that Cordell runs, that means you might have to spend, you know, 15, 30, 20, 30% of your practice time with your defense. on packages on Tebow. And what that does for your offense in Denver, even though Tebow might only see the field 5 to 6 times, that gives you an advantage on preparation. Especially when you're trying to build a team up and you try to get a team to a winning level, you need that. That's what worked for Miami for that one little year that they had that success, is that they were running other things. The Wildcat was kind of the focus, and it occupied, you know, a lot of practice time for defensive coordinators. So then you can run all your other stuff. So I think there's a strategy to it that I think they missed an opportunity on.
Yeah. So the Tebow thing is going to play out. It's going to be interesting to watch how this soap opera develops. Good luck to the folks out in Denver. We'll see what happens. You know, like Filthy said, they can win 5 or 6 games. I'll be surprised. I think they're in full-out tank mode at this point. We're going to move on to number 4. The Yankees, we're going to talk a little baseball. The Yankees and the Phillies are out of it. What happened? You know, I want to spend a little bit of time on this. Actually, yeah, we're going to spend a little bit of time on this baseball thing. I want to spend about 10 minutes on it, and then we got to move on because we're running. We got about 20 minutes left, and we still got to do our pick six. So I want to touch base on the baseball situation, the baseball playoffs. We kind of talked about this a little bit earlier when we talked about the Brewers. But, you know, you have two high-profile teams, and, you know, we always talk about big markets and how that drives the playoffs. I still think this is a very interesting playoff. I'm interested, and I could give a damn about baseball. Because the Brewers are involved, and then they're playing a rival who I know they don't like. I know they got bad blood, and so I'm interested in that way. But I still think we need to kind of just touch base over there real quick and dirty. What happened with the Yankees? I'm gonna toss that one to our resident Yankee expert, in Phil T.
Man, the Bruises are still just too raw, man. I'm gonna pass.
Well, good job. Go back to last week. You know, they didn't have no dogs. The Yankees don't have any dogs. You know, they just to me cat.
We need more dogs.
That's it. I mean, they just the Yankees started. You know, the problem with the team like the Yankees, like Boston, like. They show up every day thinking they're going to win a ball game, and so they might not take that extra step. They might not think they got to take that extra pitch. They forget about playing the game of baseball. They think shit just gonna happen for them. And then they, you know, not like good teams like the Brewers, who if one young man makes a mistake, they count on their cohort. If Ryan Braun takes that third pitch strike, he knows. Prince is right back there. He's got his back. He's gonna make that cut. You know, we're gonna get this home run. We got a base runner. We're gonna score 2. When the Yankees strike out, it's almost nonchalant. You know, it's like we got this. It ain't no big deal. Well, then you know, then somebody else strikes out. Somebody else don't get a hit. Somebody else don't make a play. And all of a sudden, they find themselves down in a deficit. And the other team is always that much more hyped than they are. The other team is that much more excited. When they were banging around Philly, you know, you don't think that the Cardinals just felt, just ecstatic, you know. And the Phillies were like, you know, we got this. It ain't no big deal. We'll go out there and pitch another inning. We got this bullpen. We got everything we need. And they just got spanked. Here's your behind. Go back to the dugout. Ain't no big thing.
And again, now with those two teams out, again, I think we have some pretty compelling series. Why don't you guys kind of get into and give folks out there, give the listeners out there your take on how you see these series playing out. Again, real quick and dirty in the next 5 minutes. Let's break this down. We'll finish up the last 15 minutes with the pick six and then get into our dogs of the week. All right. Handicap the playoff series for the listeners out there, fellas.
Well,
anybody can jump in.
At this. Yeah, I'll take a swing at this. I like the Tigers against the Rangers. Right now, they're about to close them out to make it a 2-1 series. I just think with Texas, they have a lot of lefties,
And, I mean, the reason I think Detroit's going to be tougher is they have a lot of righties, and it just plays right to their strength. They start out slow, but, again, I think Verlander's going to be pitching next game, and they're going to be even up 2-2. I like the Brewers. I like the Brewers over the Cardinals. But, you know, one of the things we talked about RJ a couple of weeks is, you know, sometimes these teams that have to fight and fight and fight just to make the playoffs, kind of like the Rays this year, the Cardinals, where they have to play 800-900 ball the last month just to have a shot. I mean, to me, that's practice. That's rehearsal for the playoffs because every game matters. And I have a hard time picking against the Cardinals for that reason. But again, I think the World Series is going to be the Brewers as well as the Tigers.
Yeah, I look at that much the same way. The only thing that bothers me about the Brewers is that they have to have a high level of excitement to play well. You know, they don't have the maturity to go back to the dugout after a bad inning. You know, when they are close and it's a good close ball game, they seem to be able to make things happen. They support each other. They prop each other up. But when they get down a couple runs, you know, they lose that enthusiasm. And sometimes having to have that kind of stimulus to win ball games is detrimental. You know, it's a sign of maturity. You know, I think Albert Pujols walks out there every single at-bat thinking, I can crush this ball and change this game. And I don't think Prince Fielder has that kind of confidence. I don't think he thinks of himself in that way yet, even though it would seem almost everyone else feels that way about him. And the same thing for Ryan Braun. They don't have that maturity to have that kind of confidence yet. So they rely on that excitement.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I think, and that's why they've been hard pressed to get these road wins in these playoffs this year. You know, they've been pretty shaky on the road. It's almost like night and day. And I think you raised some good points about the personality of the team and the guys on this particular Brewer team. Yeah, we're gonna have to see how they work this out because they gotta work it out. They gotta figure it out. To keep going.
Well, the beauty
they
got
to figure out how to win on the road and how to win close games on the road and how to win when everybody doesn't have your back.
Having that home field is going to have its advantage because, you know, that's that extra game in front of that home field crowd, you know, that may end up making the difference. The only thing is that, you know, you don't want to find yourself in that seventh or eighth inning, you know, only up a run or two, and you know damn well, you know, Pujols is got that attitude that I'm going to go out and get what's mine. You know, you better walk him. You better just walk
him. and stop tweeting about him. You better just leave him alone.
I want to see if that does play out. I want to see if that does get to him. I would pick at him like a bad scab, you know. I would just keep messing with him and messing with him.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to do what he's going to do anyway.
Right.
But what I would say is that I remember La Russa's had some of the most excruciating losses. I remember when it was like La Russa couldn't win a big game. And now he's just like he finds ways to just manufacture wins. He's a hard person to bet against. As much as I mean, some of the first baseball games I used to watch were Milwaukee against Detroit. I mean, it always seemed like that was the only tickets they could get. And they had Cecil Cooper. I mean, so that would be great to kind of see that come back again. I think that would be a great thing. But I think La Russa is hard to bet against. There's no way in the world they should have beat Philly. But he just finds a way to get them to believe. And so I think that's the one that I think Milwaukee just have to overcome that. With all the numbers and everything else is what Ray said, they're going to have to be even keel, have emotion, but be controlled.
Well, all right. With that said, we're going to slide into our pick six. First game this week in the pick six, We pick six is a segment where we pick three NFL games, three college football games, and we all give you our forecast for who's going to win and who's going to lose. All right, so last week for the pick six, we had Philly versus the Buffalo Bills, the New York Jets taking on the Patriots, and Green Bay taking on Atlanta. We also had for our NCAA games, we had Oklahoma at Texas, Florida at LSU, and Ohio State at Nebraska. Now, how we fared. Going into last week, we were Phil T was and D Wills were tied at 15-9. I was sitting at 12-12. Now I got Ray's numbers. Ray was sitting at 13-11 last week. So I finally compiled Ray's numbers up. Wait, yeah. He was at 13-11 last week. So how did we fare last week? Phil T came in the low man at 3-3. I came in next at 4-2, and then D Wills and Ray both went 5-1 last week in the pick six. So right now the standings is like this. D Wills holding it down in the top spot at 20-10.
Love it, man.
And we got Phil T and Ray tied for second at 18-12 apiece. And then I'm cellar dwelling right now. And I'm out there hanging up at 16-14. I'm not really saying about that. So this week for the pick six, we got a new set of six games, and we're going to see how we fare this week. So Phil T and I have already weighed in with our picks. Let me pull up Phil's picks real quick. My pick, or the games for this week, we have San Francisco at Detroit, Houston at Baltimore, the Buffalo Bills at the New York Giants. Those are our NFL games. For our college football games, we have Michigan at Michigan State. We have Baylor at Texas A&M. We have Arizona State at the Oregon Ducks. So we're going to go through the NFL games first. So first game, we got 4-1 San Francisco coming into town against the 5-0 Detroit Lions. The Niners are surprising 4-1. But we all like to be right. Listen, RSG fans out there, if you listen to Renegade Radio, one thing you know you have learned, if nothing else, from listening to us over the last, almost 2 years since we've been on the air, is that you're listening to four guys who love to be right, all right? And I called it in the preseason. It's another one I called. I said that Alex Smith would be a decent quarterback. I didn't say he'd be a game breaker. I didn't say he'd be a game changer. I said he would be a solid quarterback. And you fellas scoffed at me. Scoffed at me. You poo-pooed my
prediction. Did you put it in writing? Did you put it in writing? Okay.
It's on tape. It's 2011. It's on tape. I ain't Scott Walker. I said something. It's out there. So it's out there. And I said it. I said Alex Smith, he wasn't going to be great. I said that defense was going to be good, and he was going to be decent. I still didn't pick him to win the division, though. But I said that if he could put it together and he would be solid, that they'd be all right. And they're all right. So they're in a position to make some noise. They're going into Detroit. Phil T actually went against the home squad and took San Francisco in this one. Yeah.
He's trying to make up ground.
He's
trying to make up ground.
He's trying to get back in first place. Again, you're dealing with forecasts that like to be right. So, Al Davis passed away. What was the saying? Win, baby, win. That's what it's all about. I took Detroit in that one. Devon, where you going with that first game?
Well, Bo Schembechler once asked Harbaugh if he had a tight end to put his hand on the ground. Bo liked those physical tight ends. And I want to go with San Fran. I love you, Harbaugh. But I got to go. I saw some abuse the other night with Detroit. I saw some folks who straight up just looked like there was 13 linemen on the field. I just this is where it all comes crumbling down. I'm going with Detroit. 8 Mile, baby.
All right, Ray. Ray, who are you taking?
I'll go with Detroit. I ain't got to explain nothing.
You got Detroit?
Yeah.
All right. So Ray's going Detroit. So everybody but Phil is going with Detroit. Next game, Houston at Baltimore. Houston is coming off a loss at home to the Oakland Raiders. And they're going to be without Andre the Giant, Andre Johnson, the elite level wide receiver. They're not going to have him this week. And they're going into Baltimore, which is a hell of a place to get a win. Phil T went Baltimore. I'm going Baltimore. Fellas, Ray, who you got?
I'll go with Baltimore.
All right.
I'm going with Baltimore.
And Devon, who you taking?
I'm going with Baltimore.
All right. You got faith in Flacco?
What you say?
I said you got faith in Flacco?
Yep.
He wasn't. Yeah. All right, we're going to keep it rolling. We got the Battle of New York. We got representing upstate, rural New York. We got the Buffalo Bills going against the Big City Boys in the New York Giants in the new Meadowlands Stadium. Phil T is going to Giants. I'm going Buffalo. Devon, who are you taking?
I'm going Giants.
All right. Ray, who are you taking?
Is it the Giants or the Jets?
It's the Giants.
Well, I'll take the Giants at home.
Okay. All right. So everybody's going with the Giants except me. I'll take that one. I think Buffalo, they kind of got that magic that you see certain teams have for causing turnovers. And Eli will give the ball up a few times. So I'm expecting Buffalo to do their thing. All right. Now we got the NCAA football game. We got Michigan at Michigan State. In-state rivalry, blood feud. What do they play for in Michigan, fellas?
What
do they win for? What does the winner get? They play for a Brown Jug. Minnesota and Wisconsin, they play for Paul Bunyan's Axe. What do Michigan and Michigan State play for?
Bulletproof vest.
Blood.
What'd you say,
Ray? A bulletproof vest.
Bulletproof vest. All right, Phil T.
They play for the Governor's Cup.
Okay, they played for the Governor's Cup. All right. Phil T took Big Blue, Michigan, and I'm taking Michigan State. I'm going with Sparty. Who you got, D. Wills?
I can't even do it. I got to go Big Blue on this one. I can't even go with that green and white.
Ray, who are you taking on this one? And Michigan State's at home.
Yeah, I'm taking Michigan State at home.
All right. This next game, Baylor versus Texas A&M. Now, when Texas A&M decided they was going to succeed from the Big 12, Baylor, little old Baylor was the first one to say, hey, wait a minute. Bring your ass back over here. We need to talk about this for a minute.
No, Baylor said.
So now they get
Baylor,
to go at it.
Baylor said, here's my card. Here's my attorney. Give us a call. That's what Baylor said.
Right. So, Phil T is taking Baylor. I'm taking Baylor because I like their quarterback. Robert Griffin III, RG3, dude is balling. I mean, video game numbers balling. I mean, like, completing 80% of his passes. You know, he's throwing, like, two picks to, like, 17 touchdowns. Just ridiculous numbers. So I'm going with Baylor to prove a point against Texas A&M in this game, even though Texas A&M is at home. Ray, who are you taking?
I'll take Texas A&M, you know. All
right.
For the same reason that Phil T took San Francisco. I'm trying to distance myself from the pack.
That's right.
Devon, who you taking?
Going down to College Station is a hard place to play. I think Texas A&M going to hold on to this.
All right. And then we got Arizona State going against the Mighty Ducks of Oregon. Not that they're not really the Mighty Ducks, but the Ducks of Oregon. Who we got here? Phil T's got the Ducks. I've got the Ducks. Devon, who you taking?
Woo, man. Shit, Michael James went off on him a couple weeks in a row. I'm going with the Ducks.
All right. Ray, who you taking?
We ain't going to get no ground on this one. I got the Ducks as well.
He said, I ain't going to play with this one.
No.
He said, this was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
All right.
James is out. James is out for a little bit.
Yep.
He hurt his elbow or his arm or something.
Whoever the backup is going to go for 100.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so we got about 4 minutes left, and, you know, it's that time, so we're going to get into the dog of the week.
Still going crazy in there. And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs.
That joint is classic. it never stops being funny. I'm sorry.
No,
it just doesn't. It's one of those gifts to keep on giving. All right. So for my dog of the week this week, I chose Adrian Peterson. I sat down, you know, that was the regional game on up in Wisconsin because the Packers played the night game. So I sat down and I watched a lot of the Arizona-Minnesota football game just to get a feel for what was really going on with the Vikings. And damn, AP showed up in a big way. I mean, he had one run where he welcomed, what's the cat's name? The Peterson kid. From LSU, the corner from Arizona took the third pick.
Mm-hmm.
And Patterson. He welcomed that boy to the NFL in a very, very, very strange way. I mean, just rammed his ass into the end zone. I mean, they made contact at about the five. And, you know, AP must have been watching Bo Jackson, some Tecmo Bowl Bo Jackson clips, the defenders bouncing off of him because – He was in Tecmo Bowl mode out there in Minnesota. So I'm going with AP for my dog of the week. I'm gonna pass it along to Phil T. Let him check in.
More dogs.
Real quick, I got two of them. I got the Oakland Raiders. Sad to see Al Davis pass away. Rest in peace. They played very inspired against the Texans. My next dog is the St. Louis Cardinals. They shocked the baseball world and beat the true dream team, in my opinion, the Philadelphia Phillies with those pitchers. I mean, I never would have guessed the Phillies would be home after the first round.
All right. Ray, give me your dog of the week.
I'll go with the Detroit Lions. I'm starting to believe in Phil. I'm starting to see it, Phil.
Okay.
There ain't going to be no Packers, but they got their place.
Hey, man, Megatron is a machine, man. That dude is a monster. Devon, who you got?
I was going to say Detroit, and I want to say we do need to talk about Al Davis at some point, the Raiders, but I also got to say my Heisman Trophy pick, Landry Jones, 3 touchdowns, Red River Rivalry. They just put it on him.
You ain't going to talk about Ben?
They balled out.
You
ain't
going to talk about Big Ben?
I started him at my fantasy quarterback, though. Somebody dropped him when he got hurt.
I was going to say Ben. I mean, he threw for 5 touchdowns. But, you know, Detroit was much more of a dog than that.
Yeah. They slapped
him. Big Ben had the injury, though. Big Ben had the injury, though. He balled. I ain't going to. Big Ben balled. But
he balled.
I watching Adrian Peterson was like watching, you know, when you watch Little League football and there's that one kid who's a little bit bigger than everybody and he got grown man speed. That's what it was like watching Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
He had grown man speed out there against some kids.
Hey, we do have to say something about Al Davis. I would say this. Revolutionized the game. He was he had the gift and the curse. He was as complicated as Tupac. He revolutionized the game. At the same time, he may have frozen the game, but we gonna miss him.
Yeah, and Al Davis is all that Jerry Jones would ever like to be. Ain't gonna make it. He just ain't gonna make it.
That's an excellent point. Just win, baby, win, and you have won. If you have listened to the Real Sports Guys this week, again, we'll see you again next week, same time, same place, Tuesday night. 8:30 to 10:30. Peace. All right, we in the after hours segment now, fellas.
Good.
So I'm glad y'all know that. I want to make sure everybody knows they pay.
Right. Well, I wanted to make sure we said something about Al.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You know, I had a feeling they was gonna win that game, man. I had a feeling they was gonna come out and win. I had a feeling they was gonna come out and win for him. But yeah, hey, good. What'd you say?
Yeah, I thought the Texans was
going to
smash them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, I just don't think the Texans are the same without Andre.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, because, I mean, who's their number two?
He said, I'll wait.
Yeah.
All right, then.
You know, who is it? Yeah, exactly. Owen Daniels is their the next best receiver.
Well, they just picked up Derek Mason today.
Really?
The Jets trade Mason for a 7th round conditional pick.
Wow. So basically they gave him away.
Right.
I mean, you can get that 7th round pick guaranteed.
But that's what happens when you go in and start complaining about the offensive coordinator. They send you out.
Hey, I was just gonna say that. You go in and start complaining. So yeah, the Jets wanted to deny that story, saying, "Oh no, that didn't happen." Yeah, he went in there complaining. That's why they got rid of his ass.
Yeah, right. You can see Santonio coming. You can see Plaxico. But Derek, you just need to be back to just happy to be on the team. Like, Derek, you got anything to say?
Right.
No, happy to
the offensive coordinator saw Santonio walk in. He's like, okay. He's like, okay. He saw Plaxico walk in. He's like, okay, I know where this is going. He saw Derek walk in. He's like, what the fuck are you here for? What you want? At that moment, offensive coordinator was like, oh, this is some bullshit. Y'all gonna come at me like this? Y'all taking this cat?
I ain't gonna stand for this.
Right. I was good with the black people, but y'all start bringing in, Derek Mason and all these other cats. Oh, hell no, man. Y'all disrespecting me now. This is, y'all done made this personal.
Yeah,
we ain't even get to touch on Florida not having no schools in the top 25, man.
That's the one I want to talk about. That's crazy.
That's not crazy. That's,
I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy that ain't no schools in Florida in there, but then it's also crazy that it's been 32 years since that's happened.
I know. I mean, I'm trying to figure it out. But, yeah, I can understand Miami, but the other two.
Yeah, I get Miami. And you know what, man? Florida State is starting to fall into that Notre Dame category for me, man. Every year they got expectations, they fold. They fold.
Expectations. But I understand, but they don't have the same, as Notre Dame always said, they don't have the same act. They should be able to get who they want down there.
No, I don't have that. I don't have that hate. I don't have that hate.
Yeah,
for
but you're
like,
right. But you're right.
They keep, every time they got expectations, they fold. They just don't produce. I mean, they start out in the top five. After five, 6 weeks, they ain't ranked.
But they are losing players all the time. You know, you can bet you go on a recruiting visit and you go to Alabama, they go say, well, you can go to Florida, but you know, some of your stuff is going to get X'd out. Some of your games are going to be taken away. If you do win a conference championship or a bowl game, you don't know that they're going to recognize it in 10 years from now. You know,
right.
That's the problem with them Florida teams is that, you know, the violations catch up with you at some point. You know,
but you can't say when you're SEC, though, and you're Alabama. SEC is like the most corrupt division in the conference in America.
But they got an insulated system. They ain't going to get caught. Them ACC schools is like, uh-uh. Cut that out. All right, this is a basketball conference anyway. Y'all ain't finna be in here cheating. The ACC schools blow the whistle so damn quick. The SEC schools got to understand it. It's like the co-op in the SEC. It's like the co-op. You know,
I'm telling.
Yeah.
The SEC, man, they all understand. We all cheating, but we all winning. So let's keep it that way.
That was what was so crazy about Saban coming out there with some statements about agents. You know, I'm like, what are you talking about? They ain't no more corrupt than, you know, recruiters. And he can say it with a straight face too. That just kills me. I just say, whoa. That's unbelievable.
Should have been act like you ain't parked a Cadillac in somebody's driveway before and just left it there.
That's the thing. They just
left it there with a letter of intent.
You know,
on the hood.
He never has. That's the beauty of it. Is he never has. You know,
they
got it down to a science.
I would imagine Saban has. Saban just ain't been caught yet. Right. I don't trust Saban.
Yeah, I mean, because you got to think, Saban was trying to, you know, back when I was in high school in the mid-90s, he was at Michigan State. There was a lot of whispers going around, and he was trying to scratch and claw to get competitive because that's when Michigan was a powerhouse. They was on probation a few times. They even lost some scholarships a few times. But, you know, he's not clean. I mean, he's not super-duper clean now.
That's why.
I don't trust Saban as far as I can throw him.
No, I'm not saying that he's clean. I'm just saying that they've got it down to a science. You know, that's like
I guarantee they got it down to a science.
You know, the consigliere, he gonna drive the Cadillac to the driveway. You know, Saban gonna act like he don't know who he is.
Plausible deniability.
Exactly. You know.
And
that's half of these programs. When these young kids pull up in these cars that they know they can't afford. You know, the coach ain't out there in the parking lot going, you need to park that down the street.
Hey, you don't even know. Even up here, man, even up here in Madison.
Sure,
and Devon,
right.
You know it. You see some of them football players riding around in cars better than you. And you work hard.
Right.
And these cats supposed to be on scholarship. Yeah, what kind of scholarship you getting, young man? Right. You ain't going to say nothing about that. Nah, I didn't see it. I didn't see some of them cats on campus. I'm like, man, this fool got rims on an Escalade. Man, what Pell Grant money you getting?
Rex is my quarterback.
You know you see it. You know you see it. But see, again, as long as you can, and the key is you got to keep Yahoo off your ass. You can, whatever you can do. Away from you keep Yahoo away from your fucking program. Whatever
That's
you can
true.
Do.
Yahoo has broke. Yahoo broke the Ohio State story. They broke the Miami story.
Reggie Bush. That's the key.
Right.
You keep Yahoo away from your program, man. That's what you got to do right there. You see a cat with a Yahoo email address? Nah, I ain't talking to you.
I mean, when did Yahoo become a heavy hitter?
Exactly. For real. I mean, Yahoo is.
But that's the beauty of Yahoo. They're like the National Enquirer. They got all you got to have is a bit of credibility. They got the reporters
that
can go out and. You know, if somebody got a little leak somewhere, it ain't like they got a big a building in a newspaper.
Yeah, they'll turn a leak into a friggin' flood any moment.
Yeah.
He said, "You gotta keep Yahoo away from your campus."
I'm telling you, dog. You tell me a scandal that Yahoo ain't broke in the last 5 years, man. I ain't messing with Yahoo, man. That's, if I'm a coach, that's my first priority. Okay, I'm going to compliance. I'm going to my team, my recruiting team. All right, now, how the hell can we keep as far away from Yahoo as possible? We can do that. We got 80% of our problems solved right there.
So who y'all like to win the NFC North? The Packers or the Lions?
Green Bay. I'm still riding with the Packers, man, until I see, again, Aaron Rodgers is a freaking robot, man. Like, he's a quarterback and robot. Like, that dude is just cold. I mean, you watch Brady and Manning do what they do, and you're like, yeah, them guys are good quarterbacks, man. Them guys are good.
Yeah.
But Aaron Rodgers, because, like, you ain't going to see Brady run from nobody. Brady going to drop back and, pew, ball gone. Manning going to do the same. He's going to get up to the line of scrimmage, change the play 8 times, call a couple fake plays, drop back, pew, ball gone. But Rodgers, man, even when it ain't nothing there, you know, he can do the whole drop back, get rid of the ball thing. But even when it ain't nothing there and you think, okay, as a defender, you think, all right, we got these bastards this time. We got the right play call. We got the right blitz on. And you're chasing him. You're about to get him. And this fool run away from you and get rid of the ball and throws a dime, just drops a dime to somebody 30 yards down the field. I mean, on a play where he hit James Jones crossing the field, this cat rolled out, stopped, and just let it go. And, I mean, it was a beautiful pass. Hit him right in stride. He caught it and just kept on running into the end zone. That is just, I mean, between him and Megatron, man, those two cats are playing out of their minds right now. I enjoy watching both of those cats.
That Megatron is just a beast. Megatron,
yeah.
it's such a mismatch. It's how you used to feel about Terrell Owens. You watch him line up and you just or Randy Moss. You know, it wasn't a matter of if, it was just a matter of when he was going to make that play.
Yeah, man. And if Soldier doesn't understand it by now, she should understand why they call the boy Megatron.
Hey, what y'all think about LeBron James? Y'all see he was catching some balls at a high school practice last week.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that right now. Hell, the Bears should get him to be a receiver or something. Come on, catch some passes from Cutler.
We better stay away from
him. If I'm him, like, who knows?
Yeah.
Right. Pat Riley somewhere is just, not able to sleep, Ron James tweets about the deadline for playing in the NFL. Wow. How realistic would that be? A guy that was a high school football player, how long ago? 7-8 years ago?
8 years, yeah, about 7-8 years ago, yep.
I mean, we see basketball players. I mean, look at Graham in New Orleans. I mean,
yeah.
Julius Peppers
played basketball. Tony Gonzalez played basketball.
Yeah. But how realistic would it be for him to step in for a few weeks to be able to contribute right away? I don't know.
I think he'd be fine in the red zone. I think if nothing else, you bring him in the red zone. I mean, he's 6'8", about 250, 260 pounds. It's probably about, you think about a defensive back who's 5'10". He's not jumping with LeBron.
Right.
He's not getting up in the air with LeBron,
But he
can do some damage in the red zone, but of course he's not going to do that. That'd be too much of a gamble with his health. But it's just an interesting thought.
Does he have that wide receiver speed? That would be, because if I would watch him line up, if they would just trot his ass out there for a play, every now and then, I'm not sticking a D-back out there. I'm sticking a linebacker out there. I just want you to kick his ass, I just want you to whoop his ass,
Yeah.
It's like when
I don't care if you get a penalty, beat him the fuck up in the first 5 yards, beat his ass.
You guys are too young, but I remember when Wilt Chamberlain was going to fight Ali, and it was serious. They were going to do it. Wilt was working out, Wilt was a physical specialist. And all Ali kept doing, every time they'd have a press conference, Ali would be like, Timber. And then all of a sudden the fight was off. That's what I would be doing with LeBron. Go ahead, sign.
Yeah.
Just sign. Sign. Here's my pen. You use my pen. Go ahead and sign the contract. See if I don't fuck you up. this shit ain't gonna turn out like you think.
You think it's gonna go?
Right. I ain't trying to defend you. You put him up there. You put him up there against Pittsburgh, where they eat up fines for breakfast. Watch me. I'm going to go a little head-to-head with LeBron. Bam!
Yeah.
Take your ass out of here.
Yeah, and we didn't even talk about the NBA lockout situation, man, with them canceling the first 2 weeks. I'm looking at this article right here, man. Lou Aldane got his face on Money in Britain. Are you for real? That's what it takes in Britain?
Yeah, I put that on Facebook, man. I thought that was huge. That was
That's crazy. That's crazy. Third option got his face on some money.
Hey, man, 17-9, 18-9.
Right. No matter what, first option, I'm going to give you 17-8. Third option, I'm going to give you 17-8. You know? That article I forward y'all, man, from Grantland, that website by Bill Simmons, man, it had that quote from Leroy Hoard in there, man, about Tebow. It had that quote from Leroy Hoard where Leroy Hoard was like, you know, you need 1 yard, I'm going to give you 3. You need 5 yards, I'm going to give you 3. And that was Leroy Hoard. That's how he described his style, man. He's like, you need 1 yard, I get you 3. You need 5 yards, I get you 3. That's Leroy Hoard, man.
My boy, I used to play hoop against him. He's good friends with Ray, you know, with House. He's good friends with House back in Michigan. Leroy, yep.
In that article I forwarded you guys, if you get a chance to read it, check it out, because it had a real interesting point about why the NBA lockout is at the point that it is and why the NFL lockout got to a point where eventually it was like, it's something that we've talked about a lot, where it's like these NBA cats, they can get money without the league. Because if I see Dwight Howard walking down the street, I know that's Dwight Howard. You know, most people, if they saw Greg Jennings on the street, they would have to ask somebody, is that Greg Jennings? You know what I mean? Like, he would have to be standing next to a poster of himself with his helmet off in his Packers uniform for people to get it.
And that's what they were talking about on ESPN, the radio. You know, it's not like the NFL. It's not like baseball. You know, you only have a handful of superstars in the NBA.
Right.
And so you don't get paid just by what you're worth, but how hard are you to replace? You know,
exactly.
You take Aaron Rodgers off the Packers, and they're still a good football team. But
people are still going to watch the Packers. It's just like everybody that became Heat fans when LeBron left Cleveland. You know what I'm saying? Ain't no Cavs fans out there no more. Not for real. Not outside of the greater Cleveland area.
Right. So when you take LeBron out of Cleveland, they don't make the playoffs. They don't do anything, you know?
And nobody cares about that franchise anymore.
Right.
Where if you take Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre off the Packers, everybody in Wisconsin is still rooting for the Packers.
Right.
Everybody in Wisconsin is still going to ride for the Packers.
You know.
Just like in Denver, when Elway retired, everybody who was a Bronco fan was still a Bronco fan. They wanted Elway back, but he was gone. Whereas, you know, with the NBA, when Dwight Howard leaves, he's going to take a bunch of fans with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, same thing with Carmelo. He left Denver. He took a bunch of Carmelo fans with him, you know. And these players have their own fans, their own fan bases, and that's very unique to the NBA. So the article kind of touched on that a little bit. It was a real good read. There's a lot of good stuff on that site, man. I actually found myself spending an hour or two a day just kind of perusing to see what they got. There's a lot of interesting stuff on there, man.
All right, fellas. Well, I'm at the house. I better get back in there and put my stuff up.
All right, well, do what you do, man. Take care.
All right.
Take care,
Ray. Take care, Phil. Take care, D. All
right, y'all.
Peace. All right, man. Yeah, I'm finna get going myself. Y'all be easy. All right.
All right, have a good night,
fellas. Yep, take care.